Good morning. This is Wendy Bauer reading to you today from the Decatur Herald and Review, October 12th, 2015. We'll begin from the local pages, an article written by Donette Beckett, Breast Cancer Takes Center Court at Volleyball Match, from Macon. Meridian and Central A&M high schools have always been rivals, but they can come together for a good cause. Thursday's volleyball match brought the teams together for Dig Pink in honor of Breast Cancer Awareness Month. The Meridian Hawks hosted the event with special fundraisers such as a bake sale, silent auction, information center, and a selfie center. "We want people to post their pictures on our Facebook page," said organizer Melissa Newberry. "Not too many volleyball teams do this." Pink t-shirts were sold to fans before the event to encourage awareness and solidarity. Players from both teams signed the Unity Ball on the back of the t-shirts. "We tried to get the whole community involved," Central A&M volleyball coach Vanessa Work said. "We should be able to paint the gym pink." Meridian volleyball coach Tony Holly brought the fundraiser to the school after similar events proved successful at Millikan University and Eisenhower High School. He coached the sport at both schools and raised several thousand dollars for cause. "It grows and gets bigger every year," he said. "This is a total team effort." Many players and coaches have been affected by the disease, including Holly. His aunt is a survivor. He also recently lost a friend to breast cancer. "Some things are bigger than the game," he said. "It's nice that the teams can unify for this, then play each other on the court." Between the junior varsity and varsity games, survivors and those currently fighting the disease were escorted to center court to honor their courage and fight. Dawn Burge began her battle with the disease over a year ago. "The evening proved to be emotional. I cried," she said. Along with the cancer patients, medical personnel were also recognized. Medical oncologist Dr. Benjamin Esparaz has attended many cancer awareness benefits and has seen what these events can do for patients. The funds are used to support local community services. "For example, we try to provide gas cards for patients from towns like Pena, Assumption, Moequa," he said. "The funds also go for early awareness, including mammograms." Come Together, Let's Walk organizer Cindy Dedrick Wolfer has sponsored breast cancer awareness events, including Dig Pink, but she sees this fundraiser as another tool for the fight to end the disease. "The money is important, but even more important is the awareness and the education, especially for our young women," she said. "These are started or inspired by young women or coaches who know somebody. When they hear the stories, they want to do something." From Clinton, by Maria Nagel, Lee News Service writer. DeWitt deputies like body cameras. One of the first things DeWitt County Sheriff's deputies and correctional officers do when they come to work is put their body cameras on. In 2014, the agency purchased 30 cameras, one for each of its 15 deputies and 15 correctional officers, after testing two styles, Chief Deputy Mike Walker said. "Then we did a survey among the officers to see which one they liked and the reasons why. We decided to purchase the ViView cameras," he said. "Initially, not all of the officers wanted to use them. Especially with cameras, there is a little bit of skepticism as to, are we getting these cameras so administration can watch the officers? We had some of that," Walker said. By the end of the trial period, the officers had grown to appreciate the cameras because they could use the videos to write more accurate reports, he said. "In the old days, you relied on your memory and the notes that you took on the scene," Walker said. "You can have three or four people telling this happened or that happened, and you can't get it all written down. At $600 apiece, the cameras cost the county $18,000. The liability protection is huge," Walker said. "It protects our officers from people accusing them of things. We can go back and look at the video to see what did or did not happen." On the other hand, if an officer has engaged in unacceptable conduct, We can take the appropriate steps to make sure it doesn't happen again, and any discipline to be handed. The cameras also can serve as a reminder to officers to maintain their professionalism, regardless of the circumstances. The officers wear the cameras during their entire shifts, but then turn the cameras in as dictated for now by department policy. Essentially, any call for service, whether it's domestic or a burglary, we turn them on, Walker said. Because of Illinois' eavesdropping law, the DeWitt County officers must ask for permission to record using their cameras. If they say yes, we continue to record. If they say no, we shut them off, Walker said. Current law allows for use of police in-car dashboard-mounted cameras, but prohibits, in other circumstances, the recording of anyone without the consent of all parties involved. In the 2 years that we have had the body cameras, I'm not sure that we've had anybody tell us to turn them off, Walker said. If we did, it was a very minimal number because a lot of people, in the heat of the moment, really don't care, or they realize that by recording they are going to get their stories told accurately and the officers are going to be able to see what's going on. A new law, effective January 1, will give Illinois police officers more latitude to record with body cameras. The new guidelines also spell out when body cameras should be worn, when recording should begin, and how long recorded videos should be kept. And from Decatur, by Valerie Wells, staff writer, high school juniors learn leadership's many levels. K-9 officer Coy and his fellow four-legged police officers are taught to grab a suspect's leg and hang on until they hear the order to let go from their human partner. Officer Robert Baker, Coy's partner, demonstrated that by picking Coy up by the hindquarters, trying to distract him, and nothing made Coy let go until Baker gave the command that he is trained to obey. And while Coy recognizes the bite suit that Officer Chris Snyder was wearing as part of practice and training, Baker said the dog is taught to give his full effort, even while training. While being a canine officer is highly coveted, and he loves working with Coy, police are under such scrutiny lately that every decision might be questioned, including whether a situation calls for a dog to be used. The demonstration was part of a recent day learning about what government does for the Youth Leadership Institute students, juniors in area high schools who applied for the program in the spring of their sophomore year and were chosen by a panel of session hosts. The program grew out of Decatur Leadership Institute, said Renee Stivers of Partners in Education. It's for juniors in our area schools to get a taste of what it's like to belong to a community, she said. They will get to be out in the community and see all the different parts that make up a community, and we want them to be aware of what it takes. Once a month, students get an excused day out of school for sessions that will cover arts and media, social services, recreation, education, business, and healthcare. This month's session was on government and included a mock city council meeting, a tour of the Macon County Jail, a visit to the Macon County Courts facility, and one to the Decatur Police Department. At the police department, in addition to the K-9 demonstration, they learned about the emergency response team, got a lesson in shooting the training weapons used by police officers, and learned about the Decatur Fire Department. The police officers showed them the armored vehicle that would be used in a hostage situation and let them feel the weight of the protective gear they wear in that situation. They could look inside the SUV that will soon replace patrol cars and see the hard plastic seat in the back that is meant to be uncomfortable and easy to clean. Firefighters invited them to climb into the fire engine and talked about a typical day at the station. Students receive 3 college credits for participating, said Tabitha Willard, a junior at Decatur Christian School, besides getting behind-the-scenes look at the way things work in Decatur. Allie Wilcox is the only student from Sangamon Valley. We all know what government is and what they do, but we don't know the details, she said. We're not learning only about the mayor, but the judges and the police and the firefighters. Also from the education pages, by Valerie Wells. French Academy plays Cardboard Challenge from Decatur. A viral video on the internet inspired the Cardboard Challenge. Kane's Arcade was the video, the account of 9-year-old Kane Monroe, who built an arcade in his father's auto parts business and drew crowds to play the games after a filmmaker featured him. Now the Cardboard Challenge is an annual event in schools, including Decatur's own French Academy. As part of the STEM, science, technology, engineering, and math focus at the school, the principal, Julie Fain, took on the challenge. "We have bowling, foosball, we have a working pinball machine over there," Fain said. "It's all from recycled materials. It's a student-led family fun night. The children have created everything." The students came up with the games and had to work out designs and prizes and rules. Some classrooms collaborated to make one game together, and in others, they split into teams to make several. Nakia Smith and Rashad Jones manned the Ski Man game, a hybrid compromise, said Rashad. "Some of us wanted Pac-Man, and some of us wanted Ski Ball, so we just combined them," he said. Players have to roll a ping-pong ball up a ramp past the Pac-Man-shaped hazards and get the ball to land in one of several cups to earn points. It's not easy. Even Rashad had difficulty hitting a cup. "What we learned from this was problem-solving and teamwork," said Nakia. "Math and engineering both came into play in the game creation," Fain said, "and it was one of the most successful family nights she can recall. She saw two families in attendance who have never come to any other event." Samaya Matthews and classmates ran another game, requiring players to bounce a ball off a ramp and into one of several round targets, each worth points, a prize, or a free play. Next to the game itself, another cardboard box was big enough for a child to hide in and to feed the prize tickets through a slot as if by machinery. "The kids have done it all," Fain said. "That's the best part. The kids have engineered all of it, and that's where we are headed at French Academy." From Decatur, written by Ryan Voiles, staff writer. Decatur Township shifting money to local bank. The idea of moving its money into a local bank has been discussed for years in the offices and meetings of Decatur Township. Now, the township board is one step closer to making that a reality. The board voted unanimously at its monthly meeting to move the money that's currently going to an investment pool in Springfield and move it to Prairie State Bank and Trust. "It's something we've wanted to do for a while, so we're glad to move forward on it," Township Supervisor Lisa Stanley said. "All the tax money the township receives is deposited directly into the Illinois Public Treasurer's investment pool accounts in Springfield, which the township set up with the state treasurer's office several years ago. The funds there cover the township's general, cemetery, and general assistance funds." While there was a sense of convenience in the deal, township officials have questioned the practice for years due to the paltry interest the money earns. According to banking statements provided by the township, the interest generally is about $20 to $25 a month. With the move to Prairie State Bank and Trust, the township estimates it could increase its monthly interest by 4 to 5 times what it currently receives from the investment pool. Township accounts at Busey Bank, where money used to pay bills is kept, would not be moved at this time. With the board approval, Stanley is hopeful the funds can be moved in the coming months. In other business, the board voted unanimously to alter its travel policy for employees who go out of town on township business. The new policy would allow employees to receive money for travel expenses up to 5 days before the planned trip. The employee can request the money at any time, but no advance will be given before the 5 days, and they would have to provide a proof of attendance for wherever they are going. Employees currently have to pay for expenses out of pocket, then be reimbursed afterward. Stanley said that there were not specific incidents that caused the board to take up action on the policy. "We just wanted to tighten up some of the language," she said. And from the Health page by Allison Petty, staff writer, DISC to celebrate members at 15th birthday party. From Decatur, 5 days a week at 5:30 a.m., Murray and Jean Preston walk 3 miles around the track at the Decatur Indoor Sports Center. Over time, they became friends with other early risers visiting the track. The group's morning conversations can range from Dancing with the Stars to their families, and they even met for dinner to celebrate each other's 80th birthdays. "We've just gotten to be real good friends," said Jean Preston, 81. "None of us knew each other before." The Prestons are among a handful of original members who have been with the DISC since it opened in 2000. They will be honored at the center's 15th birthday celebration from 4 p.m. to 7 p.m. Thursday. The event will also include facility tours and fitness evaluations, a visit from Scoville Zoo Mobile Zoo Animals, cake, games and contests, activities with Millikan University coaches, and a free t-shirt for the first 100 attendees. DISC manager Jamie Davis said the event will be very kid-friendly and open to the public. "We're out to promote people getting healthy," she said. "We want to celebrate everyone. People, one way or another, have probably been in this facility or they've been impacted by it in some way, whether it be in a program that we offer or in a fitness aspect. Parents might also be interested in learning about child care services that the DISC DISC began offering last year." Charlie Quick, 84, is another longtime member who walks in the morning with the Prestons. After heart surgery to place a stent in 1997, Quick felt it was important to walk regularly for exercise. But when he walked outside, a dog bit him. Weather and traffic also could pose problems that don't happen with the DISC's indoor track, he said. "You just feel better," he said. "Walking helps you from the top of your head to the bottom of your feet." And further education news from Normal by Lenore Sabota, a Lee News Service writer. State budget leaves ISU in limbo. Illinois State University President Larry Dietz said the school remains strong and stable at the same time it is dealing with uncertain state funding. A reduction in state aid is expected, although the exact amount is not yet known, as the Illinois budget impasse for the fiscal year that began July 1st continues. Delivering his annual State of the University message last week, Dietz said one thing he could promise is that when a budget is finally enacted, funding for higher education will be less, perhaps much less, than we have received in prior years. Dietz said, "We are already feeling its effects across campus through positions left unfilled, delayed maintenance projects, and the lack of a salary increase this fiscal year." He drew applause from the audience in the Center for the Performing Arts when he said, "It is now time for the state to begin doing its part to end the budget stalemate and approve fair and predictable funding for public higher education in Illinois." With registration about to begin for spring semester classes, funding to provide grants to students under the state's monetary award program remains a big question mark. Schools such as Illinois State allowed students to enroll for fall semester while waiting for the state to award grants it told students they would receive. He said after his speech that he anticipates the university doing the same for spring semester, even if a budget still hasn't been approved. But some schools might not have the resources to do so. He said uncertainty is hurting current students and those deciding where to attend college. English professor Susan Coulter, chairwoman of the university's academic senate, agreed with Dietz's assessment that the university is stable and strong. However, Coulter expressed frustration with the lack of funding from the state. "If we want to keep students in Illinois, then we need to get a budget and invest in the students to rebuild the state's economy," Coulter said after the speech. Despite gloom about the state's finances, Dietz was upbeat. He noted various national rankings and the school remaining in the top 10% nationally for retention and graduation rates. Other highlights cited by Dietz included Illinois State's freshman enrollment being at a 26-year high and a record-breaking $36.8 million in private fundraising. And from Decatur, by Ryan Voiles, staff writer, commemoration restores Mary Hank's headstone. After 100 years spent in the ground, the Mary Hank's headstone will soon take its place among the thousands of memorials at Greenwood Cemetery. With the Hank's headstone on full display, dozens of residents came out Saturday afternoon to Greenwood Cemetery to see firsthand a marker nearly lost to history, as well as to hear stories about the history and lineage of the Hanks family and Abraham Lincoln. He wanted to do something special for what was a historic sort of discovery, said Lynn Dixon, director of the cemetery. In over 100 acres at this cemetery, and to strike the exact spot where this headstone was buried, it felt like a sign. The headstone of Mary Hanks, a second cousin of Abraham Lincoln, was discovered in January while employees were writing headstones that had fallen on the ground. An innocuous strike of a shovel led to employees to discover the stone. A search through the record books at Greenwood Cemetery, which date to the mid-18th century, did not reveal any record of Mary Hanks being buried in the cemetery. While history books say she was born in 1824 and was buried in 1843, Dixon questioned whether the headstone itself said 1813, which would make Hanks the oldest recorded burial in Illinois. Thomas Hanks, a descendant of Mary Hanks, said the discovery of the headstone creates some dialogue on the history of the family. It opens up a whole new avenue of discussion, and I think there will be a whole lot of talk for years to come about it, he said. Thomas Hanks was among those to speak Saturday about the history and the lineage of the Hanks family, which dates back hundreds of years to England. Other speakers included David Kent Coy, a genealogist and Lincoln historian. Coy spent much of his presentation discussing the many historical questions and rumors about the 16th president, which included unauthorized biographies claiming African-American lineage or birth to a wealthy family, instead of his famously humble roots. One has to keep an open mind because not all things are as they seem, Coy said. With the commemoration completed, Dixon said the next step for the headstone would be to set it in its rightful place alongside Hank's parents. Within a few weeks, Dixon said he was hopeful they can fill in a concrete base and set the stone upright for the first time in more than a century. After seeing several dozen people come out to the cemetery for the event, Dixon did not rule out doing an annual event to honor and commemorate the various families who reside at Greenwood. I'm very happy with the turnout today, and that not only are people excited about the headstone, but about the family that it belongs to, he said. And from the crime page, Edith Brady Lunny, a Lee News Service writer, writes, Kirk Zimmerman Defense Counsel removed from Bloomington. The defense lawyer for murder suspect Kirk Zimmerman was removed as his counsel after a judge ruled that her firm's representation of three men considered alternative suspects created a conflict of interest. Zimmerman hired Stephanie Wong after his arrest in July on murder charges in the shooting death of his ex-wife Pam Zimmerman in November. The victim was found November 3rd with multiple gunshot wounds in her Bloomington office. Kirk Zimmerman, 57, told Judge Scott Drzewski on Wednesday that he was willing to waive any conflict Wong and her firm, Skelton and Wong, had resulting from their consultation with three men who were expected to testify at his trial. Drzewski questioned Kirk Zimmerman about the potential problems if the three witnesses were to be cross-examined by Wong. The scope of the Wong's questioning could have been limited by her firm's previous attorney-client relationship with them, the judge said. Information gathered by Wong and fellow attorneys, Steve Skelton and Josh Rinker, during their conversations with the three witnesses could not be disclosed. The refusal of the three witnesses, Pam Zimmerman's fiancé Scott Baldwin, her friend Lee DeYoung, and Eldon Whitlow, her last client on the day she died, to waive confidentiality of the information was a major factor in the judge's ruling. Baldwin said he believed he was still Rinker's client at the time Kirk Zimmerman was arrested, the judge noted. Springfield lawyer James Elmore, in court on behalf of the law firm, argued that the importance of the three witnesses was short-lived in this case. They were quickly eliminated as suspects. Assistant State's Attorney Adam Grist explained the relevance each witness has to the murder case, starting with Baldwin, whose recent engagement to the victim was described as a significant event in the days before her death. DeYoung was a friend of Pam Zimmerman's and had used space in her office, said Grist. Drazewski ruled that Kirk Zimmerman's waiver was insufficient to overcome the potential conflict, citing several court opinions in which a conflict of interest resulted in convictions being overturned. He said a defendant is entitled to the undivided loyalty of counsel. Kirk Zimmerman said he will hire new counsel. An October 22nd hearing is scheduled to review the status of the case. And finally, company uses Ferris wheel ride as interview site. As if job interviews weren't stomach-churning enough, imagine sitting through one while looping around a giant Ferris wheel. Last month, top executives from ad agency Havas Worldwide commandeered six gondolas of the Ferris wheel at Chicago tourist hotspot Navy Pier to interview job candidates for several dozen positions, giving each applicant two revolutions of the wheel, about 15 minutes, to convince them why they should be hired. Under a cloudless sky, candidates dressed more for brunch than for a job interview clutched resumes, laptops, and portfolios as they waited to be called into a gondola for one-on-ones with the company's top brass, an opportunity as unique for its early access to the C-suite as it was for taking place 150 feet in the air. It's a street fight for talent, said CEO Paul Marabella, 44, who has been at the helm of Havas's Chicago office for 2 years. At the time of the event, the 500-employee office had 40 to 50 open positions, including creative, account management, strategy, finance, human resources, and executive-level positions, Marabella said. The agency hoped the unconventional approach would surface innovative thinkers, relax the typically stressful interview environment, and show off Havas's own creative chops, Mirabella said. Spotlighting the Ferris wheel days before it was dismantled was also meant to align with the Chicago office's specialization in reinvigorating classic American brands, he said. The 20-year-old lakefront icon was taken down last month to be replaced next year by a taller Ferris wheel with temperature-controlled gondolas. Modernizing and contemporizing American brands is what we get out of bed for in the morning, said Marabella, whose interviewing outfit consisted of black jeans, a black button-down shirt, and black puffy Havas-branded vest that many of his employees also wore for the occasion. Havas Chicago clients include Hefty, Cracker Barrel, and Sears, Marabella said. Acrophobes may feel at a disadvantage if the thought of dangling high above in a metal box sets the pulse racing, but Marabella said candidates could show ingenuity with a counteroffer to meet at sea level. If someone sent me an email and said I can't interview on the Ferris wheel, but I'll interview on the carousel, I would have taken them up on it, Marabella said. And we will take a short break now. This is Wendy Bauer reading from the Decatur Herald and Review. It's October 12th, 2015, and I will be back with you shortly.